Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Standing by, the Terry and Ted podcast is sponsored by the UPS Store Canada.
The Standing Wife podcast. That's a good intro. I'm Terry DeMonte. That's Ted Bird.
I'm the Frito Bandito.
Yes, you are. Mm-hmm. Are you allowed to be? I don't think the Frito Bandito wouldn't fly today.
The Frito Bandito commercials from back in the day?
Probably not. Yeah.
You, with the hat and everything, the gun belt and
or
stuff?
The two lazy cats on the Bugs Bunny cartoons?
Yeah. Didn't he have a gun belt, the Frito Bandito?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he wouldn't fly on a number of levels.
Yeah. But anyway, that's a story for another day and another podcast. Welcome to another edition of the Standing By podcast. As always, brought to you by our very good friends at the UPS Store Canada. UPSstore.ca is the website. Our good friend David Drucker had lunch with us earlier this week because I was in town. It was a nice opportunity to break bread. And I said to David, it's 380 stores now, isn't it? And he said, yeah, I think so.
Ish.
Yeah. And that's because they're growing quickly. By the way, he also told us, if you've heard these commercials on the Standing By podcast before and thought, I think I could run a UPS store, you can find out how to become a franchisee on the website. But in the meantime, if you're looking for help with your business from home, a lot of people run businesses from home now, the UPS store can help you with everything. You can get an address there. You can get your mailbox, pick up your mail at the UPS store. If you don't want people to know where you're running your business out of home, a lot of people don't want their home address on their business. They can handle that. They can take a passport photo, which is a really...
I had no idea.
Yeah,
not a clue. Me. Are you allowed to smile in your passport photo?
That you'd have to ask the folks at the UPS store. And they can take care of shipping, packing, you name it, if it has to do with running a business. Or never mind running a business. If you need to ship some stuff to your kids at college or you want to send some Christmas presents across the country, they can handle it all for you. The UPS store. Find a location near you. It's easy to find. The UPSstore.ca.
Let's introduce our guest for this episode.
Please do.
Back in 2009, when I quit Shome in a huff and went, yeah, fuck you guys, I quit. And then I went, uh-oh. What do I do now?
Gotta eat.
What I ended up doing was going across the St. Lawrence River to the sovereign Mohawk territory of Ganawage, where I met Chuck Barnett, who was running the radio station in Ganawage, K103. And Chuck hired me, and I had 2 great years over there, and got to know Chuck, and he's one of my favorite people. He's one of the smartest and funniest guys I know, and I asked Chuck before he came on the show, I asked him yesterday, Chuck, can you send me a bio? And he sent me an autobiography. It was quite a book. Chuck has the longest and most diverse resume I've ever seen, Chuck. I know of a lot of the things that you've done over the years, including running the radio station in Ganawage. You run Mohawk Internet Technologies, which is, what is the technical term for
that? It's a data center and part of a global internet network. A global private network.
What I didn't know is that you laundered money at one point.
Would
good
you
for
now,
you.
Please, sir? These are the type of things we'd like to call indictables. No, there's been no money laundering. I actually have to go through really stringent background and probability checks annually, so no issue there.
You go back, you and I go back to 2009, as I mentioned. Your own story is absolutely fascinating, and I'm not going to begin to try to tell it because I can't. That's best left to you. But it started in Maine. You were born in Maine.
I grew up on the coast of Maine. My father was an iron worker, so when World Trade Center was going up, Towers 1 and 2, 1970, 1971, the pay scale was horrible on that job in New York, so we migrated up the coast of Maine to build a nuclear power plant where I was... came out of my mother there, and I grew up on the coast of Maine, coming back to Ganawaga every summer and recommitted, you know, renewing my relationships with all my family. So I kind of had two homes at the same time. I had my home on the coast of Maine and my Ganawaga home. So I grew up very typical of the time. Raised a lobsterman. So from the age of six, I went to work on a commercial fishing vessel. I mean, you say today it's like something out of Charles Dickens' novel, but by the age of six, I was operating a 6-ton commercial fishing vessel. Learned to do everything on the boat, baiting irons, catching lobsters, hauling traps, setting traps, mending nets, everything. So,
if your dad was an iron worker, how did you end up on a lobster boat?
I was sold into indentured servitude at a very young age.
Oh.
He got out of iron working because during the Carter years, the economy went to the toilet when Jimmy Carter was in power, and there wasn't a lot of large jobs happening during that period. So in our migration to the States and to the coast of Maine, he went into commercial fishing. He's like, you know, I'm at a certain age. I'm getting a little tired of hanging my ass off steel in the middle of November in downtown Manhattan. So I let's try this out for a while.
Chuck, was he one of the workers that are famous for being able to work high atop?
Yeah, he was a connector.
It's a thing with – is it specific to Mohawk people that they have the ability –
almost like an old wives' tale. Well, Mohawks aren't scared of heights.
Yeah, no,
is that a load of shit?
That's what I want to know. If it's a load of shit,
there's a couple components here, and I don't speak with any authority. I don't speak on behalf of any other Mohawks. It's just through my own anecdotal observations. It's a different regard for not just heights, but the space you occupy.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah.
Okay. So, what drives us nuts is when we go into a shopping mall or we go into the city. You guys are just crowded so close together in terms of physical space. There's a very different kind of spatial awareness in terms of the bubble you occupy. Now, the same thing if you were to look at, say, a European person's steps in the sand. If you follow footsteps in the sand on a beach, you could quickly identify a Mohawk's footsteps from a non-native's footsteps, because Europeans tend to straddle when they walk. They have a wide stance.
Interesting.
They take up a very wide volume of real estate when they walk. But if you watch a Mohawk's footsteps, okay, it's almost like you're rolling on the side of your feet. Okay.
Wow.
So the depth of the impression is going to be on the outside cutting edge of the heel, on the edge of the foot, and it's. There's some theory. Listen, I'm no Bertrand Russell or anything. I have no monopoly on good ideas here. But in essence, if you move through the eastern woodlands of North America, walking on the cutting side of your foot, you make a lot less noise. Now speed that up and start running through the woods on the side of your – using the cutting sides of your feet. You're almost stealth-like.
Wow.
Yeah. So my own personal assessment is that it's observance of physical space – coupled with the walking position.
Because I've read a lot about, you know, Mohawks building skyscrapers and bridges and, you know, places where I'd need to wear a diaper if you even, like, push me out onto the ledge.
Yeah, it's a whole different lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone.
No.
All my uncles, all my grandfathers, everybody was an iron worker in my family. So I'd be like the first generation that's not iron working, for example. But he used to bring me to work. So probably one of the earliest jobs I went up on was World Trade Center number 7. I was 11 years old at that time.
Wow.
He was a walking boss at that point. And he would, instead of having me do nothing all summer, he'd bring me to work. So World Trade Center, sometimes we'd be in Brooklyn, sometimes we'd be in Queens. And that's it. That was my normal.
Wow.
Was things like that, and the migration of having to get up Sunday night at midnight, and then make the drive, make the drive into New York, and then it's go go go. You're on the job.
Oh,
Chuck, at what point in your life did you realize that you were Indigenous and that was listen, follow me here, and that was separate from Terry and I and our culture and that there were certain advantages, certain disadvantages. Like, you know, when did that?
In the words of Archie Bunker, kids are rotten.
Yeah.
Okay, kids are rotten, and kids are quick to point it out when you stick out amongst everybody else. And I grew up in Maine amongst all, you know, French Canadian descendants, of which Maine is very much populated by, and, you know, young, tough Irish pricks, all these kids. And when you're the only kind of dark haired, sort of almond shaped eyed, slightly different, your family right. slightly differently complected, they let you know right away that you are not one of us. You're something, you're the other, you're different. And so you adapt, you improvise, you overcome, and it builds a certain tenacity in you, a resilience in you. And because wherever we go, we're outnumbered. We make up, Indigenous people make up what, 1%, 2% of the overall population of Canada. So whenever we enter your spaces, we know we're outnumbered, like immediately. There's no question about it. So, you know.
It's interesting to me that you use that phraseology, when we enter your spaces. Mm-hmm. So you did feel separate.
Well, yeah, I thought I had sort of touched on that with the kids a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so I know when I relate to you.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's interesting to me.
There's certain cultural barriers, and gotcha. not walls, yeah. but just you two relate with each other, or your families relate with each other in a very different way than we're very physical.
Right.
So like, it's not beyond us to punch you in the arm
okay.
instead of laughing.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
It's very physically engaged.
Okay.
Between each other, but we also know some people don't like to be hit. We know some people do,
yeah.
but it's all in that course of engagement. It's everything from eye contact. It's everything from body language. It's all these things, and you're very aware of it. And you know, you get home, yeah. and you're like, "Mom, why do they talk like that when they really mean this? How come they say this, but they mean just the opposite at the same time?"
Yeah.
So it's a lot of these things that have to get negotiated on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to position it so you're different than us.
No,
I don't even think of like I, you know. I'm thinking of you in terms of introducing you on the podcast, and one of the fascinating things to me about you is that you come from a different background than us. But when I'm with you on a friendship level,
heroes and references Kelly's heroes.
Yeah,
yeah. Listen, because I have no monopoly on good ideas. Okay, this. Greater, larger culture, okay? It's very much driven by shared media. So when you guys get together, you make references to media, television shows, movies, books, pop stars that you know and you're aware of. And that's very much ingrained and embedded in part of your daily culture. We'll call it lowercase c culture. Capital C culture would be like your language, your lineage, you know, your politics. But the lowercase c stuff, the stuff you have on a park bench, that's... That's a different thing. And so, listen, we've been watching with great interest, observing patiently, rubbing our hands, waiting. Okay, No, I kid. So part of being a Mohawk is you're also surrounded by all of these multicultural communities in your hometown, in your backyard. So you become keenly aware of all the differences between different peoples, and you do your best to adapt and improvise. And we'll set up a community in Brooklyn where there'll be 100 Mohawk families in Brooklyn, and we know that we're here for a while. Like, even when we say, like when we say in English, we say, like, where do you stay? Now, right?
I know that one, yeah.
Okay, so
you know what that means, where do you stay?
No, sir.
Where do you live?
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's not just a change in words, but it's not just swapping stay for live. Where you live is home, and home for us is Ganawage. Right. You're just staying here for now. It's transitory.
Okay, I understand.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
or even where you stay in the village. He asked me for directions to someplace once, and he stays here. Well, that's where he is now. I don't know if he's going to be there
right
a year from now or 5 years from now, but presently he stays there.
So it would be like when people say to me, where are you staying? Like, because I don't live here anymore.
Yeah, well, yeah. If they said, where are you staying? Correct. And you said the Fairfield Inn, they'd say, well, that's an odd place to stay.
Right?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Another thing I learned in Ganawage, one of the many things I learned over there when I worked there was pie is a euphemism. Not for something that your aunt bakes and puts on a windowsill. And when I do stand-up comedy over there, I always open by establishing my Ganawage street credentials, which are A, I worked for 2 years on the morning show at K103, B, B, I've watched the Super Bowl at the home of former Grand Chief Mike DeLille. Right. And C, on more than one occasion, I've eaten Joanne Patton's pie.
I'm going to waltz very delicately through those tulips. And you're right. And part of it is, Ted, you know by now you can show up in Gunawaga tomorrow. And they remember who you are.
Well, the first thing they say is, I thought we got rid of you.
Right, exactly.
Well, one of my favorite stories, I've known Ted for 1,000 years, and one of my favorite stories that he tells is being at the restaurant in, remember you told me about the father and the son?
Oh,
I found that to be a very moving story. Yeah. It meant so much to you, and it's an indication of what you're talking about.
Going into the cafe. What's the cafe on the old Malone Road that Buddy runs? I can't remember anyone's name.
There was the bakery. Head. Then there was the breakfast place. It's gone
Keith.
Now.
Keith ran it.
Yeah, what was it's gone now.
Oh, it is.
It is. Yeah, COVID struck again. It took out the whole block.
Anyway, about 18 months into my two-year run at K103, I'm going in there one day to get coffee, and there's a gentleman and his son are coming out, and his teenage son, and we said good morning to each other, and I can't tell the story without crying.
Yeah.
Go for it.
So I walk by, they go the other way, and he says to his son, that's Ted Bird. He's part of our community now.
Yeah. And that means something, Ted.
You think?
Right?
Yeah.
Right? What does that feel like to belong?
And you talk about, I mean, that community is a hard nut to crack, man.
We've seen a lot.
You know,
it's pretty hard boiled.
What I liked about that is that it felt earned.
Yeah, and it was, Ted. That time there, and part of the proof of that is you can be gone for 20 years, show up one day, and they're going to look at you as if they just seen you yesterday.
Yeah.
How you doing, Ted? Where you been?
I go to the shell. Puck comes out and goes, oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. It's very much like that when there was a professor at Cornell, Dr. Audra Simpson, who once said something, an old friend of mine, and she said something to me. She goes, being a part of the community is not being a resident in the community. It's about being part of our stories. You don't exist until you exist in our stories. And that's what gets carried on, is the stories. And we love telling stories. The minute we get together, the stories come out, and it's always one upsmanship, but who can make the other one crack up or laugh. And that's what's kind of kept us buoyant. What's kept us afloat all these years is that, you know, it's a bit like the Irish, right? Where everything is, it's just futile, you know? You know, turkey tree and a turd. Hey, where sometimes you have to laugh in the face of adversity and in the face of grinding pressure, whether legislative, social, whatever it is, you just have to laugh, because what's the option? Cry.
Yeah, you know? I just did.
Yeah, but you're. Yeah, but it means you felt something.
It was in a good way, though.
Yeah, but you felt something there, right?
It's happy crying.
Yep.
Yeah, you're happy crying. We talked about this on an earlier podcast about how as we age we get a little bit more emotional.
Yeah.
And I didn't think Ted was going to cry, but I know clearly this story means the world to him.
Yes.
Because as he said, it was earned. It was earned.
Every morning.
Yep.
They turned on, now you have to think, at radio. I don't know if you guys have done your time. What am I going to tell you guys about radio? You were a guest in their home at 6 o'clock in the morning.
In their bedrooms, in their showers, in their pains, and
in their joys and victories. And you're there. You're more than just sonic wallpaper. You are a guest in the home.
Yeah. And I torpedoed my career when I quit Shom.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have had that experience.
And I hope it's something you carry with you.
Oh, shit.
I mean, I can see you relaying the story right now, how profoundly that meant to you. Now, imagine getting up every morning and feeling that. Every morning. And you look around you. And some days I wake up and it's like, imagine all the guys you went to high school with, or all your summer friends from childhood, and you grew up and you saw them every day. It's a bit like heaven in that sense, right? You get to see all the people you love, all the people who make up your emotional and mental universe every day on the street.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, I'm going to tiptoe into this because...
Oh, geez, it already feels racist, Terry. Well, can yeah. I ask you, yeah. that's one hallmark, the yeah. second one is...
Here it comes.
Here it comes. Yeah. I don't well, mean no, to be racist.
No, I'm getting ready to get punched, though.
You're still within arm's length, my friend.
Well, it's...
How's the heart doing?
Well, if you punch me in the chest, you okay. may kill me. All right, other than that, I'm okay. I'm curious to know your feeling and understanding and... explanation for me about what land acknowledgements mean to you.
SFA.
Okay. That's what I wondered aloud about that because I'm in no position as a white person to comment, but when I see people doing it, I think, and what?
What does it mean? What are you saying? Well, we just want to acknowledge that we're here on the presence of traditional Gunyagihaga territory. Okay, great. Fine. No, I just want to say that. So are you making an effort now to resolve? We talk about truth and reconciliation.
Yeah.
And first thing about reconciliation, you're a married man. You were a married man many times over.
Yes.
And so you, by experience, you know, you get in a tiff with your other half. And you want to reconcile your differences.
Yeah.
The first thing is, let's acknowledge what I did wrong.
Yeah.
And that's a part of saying, okay, I did some things.
Yeah.
They may have been very bad. And now that's sort of the opening salvo. And now how do we truly reconcile this? It's not enough to just say, yeah, I may have killed some kids or I may have stolen a lot of things or I may have... plowed your community asunder and ran a seaway through it. Where do we go from here?
Right.
It's not enough. So listen, it's a nice gesture. On the social political spectrum, I tend to lean a little more conservative given my age. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was a little more young and idealistic when I was younger. But it's like it's coming from the same people who decided Latinx was a word.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
It's a hollow gesture.
Is it patronizing, Chuck?
A little bit. I know I get uncomfortable. I get the skin crawly things when I have to sit in an auditorium and I'm like, all right, we're going to do the thing that makes me uncomfortable and there might be some people looking at us, some with a little bit of sadness in there. I don't know if they want me to cry like the goddamn Indian on the Make America Great commercial.
From the pollution
commercial. Yeah, tin can on the side of the road. Yeah. But that's not us. Great. You acknowledge there's... what's still happening today. It doesn't resolve anything.
Because a friend of mine...
It's a good question, though.
Yeah,
and you delivered it in a very sensitive manner. Well, like, I'm impressed by you, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're so articulate.
A friend of mine who works for a big corporation was just instructed, somebody that I know who lives out west, was just instructed to put a land acknowledgement at the end of their all their emails. So they, you know, when you know, it's like Al Pissface, sales manager of Rippity Doo Corporation, and I acknowledge that we are operating on the story. Mm-hmm. Like he doesn't even know what to write, he's saying to me, if I send this to my clients. How am I contributing in any way? What the fuck are we doing?
I don't know. I don't know who came up with this. The problem is that we start to build a resistance to it. I think we see it every day in every email and every caveat on the back of every billboard.
Yeah.
We become numb to it.
Yeah.
And it loses any sense of value or meaning. It's just words that we just throw out there.
Right.
Like, hi, how you doing?
Yeah.
I don't give a shit how you're doing.
Yeah.
I really don't care. Yeah. Don't tell me because I don't care.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It becomes something, it becomes a perfunctory. And let's have a real meaningful talk. What does it really mean at the end of the day? And again, I don't speak on behalf of any Mohawks. I don't even speak on behalf of the Mohawks of my family, for Christ's sakes.
No, but you have a particular perspective that I think is important to talk about. You know, I'm intensely curious about the issue and where we find ourselves at in 2023. And, you know, I was first exposed, you know, when I born and raised Montrealer. And
you can put your foot back up. Don't worry. It's not weird. It's weird.
Born and raised Montrealer, when we were kids, we knew, forgive me, that the Indians lived in Caughnawaga.
Right.
That's all we knew.
Right.
We never learned anything, but nobody ever told us about it. I didn't understand what it was. I only knew what I saw on television.
Yes.
And then when I moved to Manitoba in 1978,
right,
where indigenous cultures are widespread across the province.
Right.
I was like, okay, I understand, right?
Right.
And then the more you read about it, there are some communities that are completely stricken and so in mired in poverty and corruption and don't thrive in any way, shape or form. And then there are other places across the country. You know, like I think there's a band in Osoyoos who says we want the federal government to leave us alone because we're thriving.
Kahnawake is relatively prosperous.
We're almost like libertarian in that sense.
And is that a geographical thing? Is that how Kahnawake has been able to prosper to the extent that it has because it's in the shadow of the big city on a major seaway?
Well, first, let's be very clear. We settled here before you did in 1637.
Yes. Understood.
Okay, and we like to think of you as our fastest growing suburb. We're very proud of what you've done here. I mean, there's been some skips and misses along the way, but overall, we're quite proud of how you've grown up. We're older than Lachine, and Lachine is the oldest established township in.
Because it wasn't one explorer thought he got to China.
Can you believe
we found it?
The Indians are in China.
Yeah.
What is this?
What I'm talking about, Chuck, is that there are certain there are certain laws that if you are a business person in Kahnawake, you can take advantage of. For example, Mohawk Internet Technologies.
Yep.
Does that not exist in Kahnawake because there are loopholes?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, explain that to me.
Mohawk Internet Technologies is one of over 30, 40 more data centers globally. What it is we're in the technical innovation business. So it's access to fiber. It's access to connectivity. And it's having the know-how and the wherewithal to put all those pieces together to create a complete global network. Mohawk Internet Technologies is just one permutation of that global network.
Okay, I thought that it had something to do with online gambling.
It has hosted as much as 75% of the world's online gaming activity at one time or another. But Montreal, most people don't know, Montreal is a hub for online gaming activity. It really is. A lot of leadership came from here. A lot of captains of industry came from Montreal and went on. And it's risky. They went out into the mountains. They sought their gold. They went out there with their donkeys and their pans and their screens. And they made their fortunes. And something about Montreal loans itself to that sense of innovation and overcoming adversity and seeing opportunity in technological markets. I don't know what it is about this city, and I'm not trying to flip it back at you, but I think it's sort of it's a broader thing that extends beyond just Kahnawake. How does Kahnawake persevered and overcome the many challenges, whether it be the Indian Act, which is basically the original Canadian apartheid? Okay, so we can turn our nose up and have as many marches to free Nelson Mandela as possible in South Africa, but apartheid was based on the Canadian Indian Act in the 1890s. Okay, that's one of Canada's greatest exports that nobody likes to talk about. It's an awkward sort of kind of dead kids, apartheid.
How about them Habs?
Humming. Right. So it's one of those things. For Kahnawake, part of our ability to adapt, improvise, and overcome is that we are one of the few native peoples in Quebec that speaks English. We used to be a French-speaking community at one time.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so you'll see it resident in some of our last names as well. So we realized that going into the ironwork trade, geez, just probably close to 100 years now, we started embracing English as the daily, everyday language, as the language of business, the language of work, the language of the workplace. And it was booming out from Kahnawake every Sunday night to New York City that kept our community alive. And whether it's building Madison Square Garden, the Twin Towers, the Arizona Narrows, I've had both grandfathers who were on the Empire State Building, great-grandfathers. So the New York skyline is really what contributed to the sort of the tenacity, resilience, and the independence of the people of Kahnawake. Not that that wasn't already in place. Don't forget, we survived how many wars that you guys fought against each other? Constant, like rock 'em, sock 'em robots in our backyard for hundreds of years. I'm like, enough of this. Every time we move, they bring the war with them. And so we managed to persevere, stay together as communities, keep our language, our culture, and our identities intact until sort of the smoke cleared at that point, only in the last, 20th century? which is not that long ago. That's our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers. I mean, but there's been a Mohawk present on almost every battlefield for the last 300 years in every conflict. If you want to go all the way back to the American Revolution, the American Civil War, War of 1812, we'll burn this place down. We burnt this place down once, we'll do it again if we have to, that sort of thing. And in terms of defending even Canada from the U.S. sort of, that's what I'm looking for, the Warhawks at the time attempting to annex Canada. Well, those were Mohawks, Laura Secord, all those great Canadian history moments.
Right.
Those were Mohawks.
Yeah.
So just stay out of our yard.
Well,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Stay out of our yard. Don't want trouble. Just stay out of our yard, you damn kids.
My favorite remembrance ceremony every year is the Mohawk Legion remembrance ceremony.
What is it about it, Ted?
Well, it's what really packs me in, and here's where I cry again.
It is.
I was going to say, I think he's going to cry.
The Native singers.
Yeah.
Everyone starts at the Legion. The Black Watch is there. Yeah. The Black Watch is there every year as their guest. Black Watch pipes and drums. Yep. They march to the cenotaph.
Yep.
And then they have Native singers, and it just
packs you in.
Oh,
you're
unbelievable.
Feeling something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Right? But what's interesting to me, Chuck, is that the overwhelming majority of Mohawk veterans in Ganawage served in the United States Armed Forces. Very few in the Canadian Armed Forces. Why is that? Because I know they have the option, right? They could serve in one or the other,
right? Well,
we're
dual citizens, and it was, it was ratified in, I think, I don't know, 1933 with the Paul K. Daiwo versus United States in the Supreme Court. It was determined that we are dual citizens, that basically we're in our backyard, whether we're in New York, whether we're in Quebec, it's still our traditional homeland, and that's nothing new. It's what we've always asserted. So given the option, so okay, you grow up on a reserve, you live on a reserve, you're a young man, you're full of that fighting piss and vinegar, and maybe there aren't a lot of options for you in life. You have a couple, this is going back, now I'm going back a couple generations now, okay? Maybe not in the today, things have changed a bit more with the creeping in of technology and more opportunities and the ability to pursue education. Don't forget, if you were a Native person in this country and you pursued an academic career and went to university and you got a degree, you were no longer Native by that point. Your Native identity was stripped. You were taken off of the status. You lost your status simply by achieving a certain degree of education. Okay, and the same.
What's the logic behind that?
Yeah.
You guys wrote the laws, not me. Okay. Talk to your congressman. Okay. All right. Wow. Well, it's part of a larger. It was part of Canada trying to resolve its own. And I'm making air quotes for those who are listening. Air quote, Indian problem, which was, okay, we're not getting rid of these Native people. So it's taking too long. They're not dying off. So what's the solution? Well, you strike them down off the paper as being Natives, okay? So enfranchisement could come in the form of achieving a certain degree of post-secondary education. It could be joining the Canadian military, okay? It could be marrying out. It could be any myriad of things. And once you start having less and less Native people because they don't exist on paper anymore, you gradually funnel down and you reduce your, air quote, Indian problem. Yeah. So the fact of the matter is that a lot of us were migrating back and forth between New York City and Detroit and these other urban centers. So when we go to the States, there's not that sense of adventure. We're just going into our backyard. Yeah.
There's no border on the territory, is there?
You mean between the U.S. and Canada?
Yeah.
So that would be in Akwesasne, which is our sister community, about an hour away.
Yeah.
But there is very much a border there.
Yeah, there's a border crossing, but it isn't acknowledged by the people there, is it?
You'll get shot if you run it. But you go through and you flash your status card.
Yeah.
And they've probably seen you come by 10 times this week going to the store to get bread and milk.
Right.
And you pass through, and so that's just the way it's more or less always been, to some degree or another. But you were asking in terms of enlisting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in terms of enlistment, okay, if you had the option as a young man, okay, piss and vinegar, okay, and you have two choices. You can go be a union iron worker in New York, or you can go be a U.S. Marine. What are you choosing?
Yeah,
I know where you stand.
Yeah. And I know I know a lot of ex-Marines in town.
We have more ex-Marines per capita, definitely in Canada, than anybody else, but probably even stateside. We have the largest per capita enrollment in the Vietnam War, and Canada wasn't even part of the conflict. This is volunteering.
Yeah.
During the Vietnam War.
Yeah, I know guys in your demographic who did tours in Iraq. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Darren Paul and Jay Deerhouse.
That's my cousin, yeah.
Lance Horn.
Yeah, Lance Horn as well, yeah.
I don't know. Another thing that I find really cool is a lot of women who served in the U.S. Marines from Ganawage, like Kirby DeLisle. The fact that she could beat the shit out of me with her bare hands and take me out with a single shot from 500 yards, that's hot, Chuck.
How cool
that's
is that?
Very hot.
How cool is that, right?
You know. Here's an idiotic question, another idiotic white guy question.
Please be racist.
Okay.
Come on.
I'm working on it.
It's amping up. I can't wait for the... Okay, what's up with those feathers?
How come you don't have...
Exactly.
No. You said status card, and it dawned on me. That's all you need to cross the border, or what is considered to be the border.
So
you don't need a passport.
Not in terms of land travel.
Yeah.
In terms of land travel,
right.
our status card.
Yeah.
So every native person in Canada is issued from birth a government ID.
Yeah.
To show your papers, okay, and that's our number from birth to death, and we are tracked from birth to death. Our children receive a subordinate number that is associated with our number, so we're very much existent in a database somewhere that's watched very closely. But yeah, we show our status card crossing the land border. To get on a plane or anything else, obviously we need the paper passport.
That wasn't too racist, was it?
No, yeah, okay. your definition of racism. You're easy, man. I'm
stand by, Chuck. Yeah, we're just getting warmed up.
Yeah, that Tonto thing. What's up with that?
We got
speaking of Indians.
What?
Speaking of Indians.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we got to take a moment.
But we're talking Dot here, not Feather. Yeah. Right.
We use that too all the time.
I know.
We love it.
That's where I learned it. I learned that from you.
I've heard Indian
dot
guys
or Feather.
And you know what? He'd laugh.
I know he would.
Sugar Sammy would laugh.
Oh, okay.
Sugar Sammy is a sponsor of the Standing By Terry and Ted podcast.
At least he was up until this episode.
Until a minute ago. Yeah. Sugar Sammy is, of course, a groundbreaking Montreal comedian. You can't possibly live in this part of the world without ever having heard of Sugar Sammy. I mean, just his Metro billboards, the billboards in the Metro alone are worth the price of admission. He's had so much fun marketing this show, You're Going to Rear. From the first one to You're Gonna Rear Two, or Gonna Rear Deux, actually, the bilingual show that both Ted and I have seen and just can't recommend enough. Mitch Garber, when we had him on the podcast, said it's a great date night. And it really is.
Except your date might leave with Sammy. That's the...
yeah, there's that.
That's the one thing you might want to keep in mind. He's pretty handy with the ladies.
So he sold out the whole first thing, and it took him a while to come up with the, to decide to do You're Gonna Rear Deux, and he's done it. And then all of 2023 sold out. It's been sold out for months. He puts these shows on sale, and they sell out. This gives you an idea of how good he is, how popular he is, how much fun this show is, how groundbreaking it is. And he's just added dates in 2024. And if you want to go in January, tough tits.
Yep.
Because it's sold out already in January. February is really going fast. I don't know what's going to happen in March and April. I don't know how long he's going to stay on the road. I'll ask him. I'm seeing him. He's bringing this show to Vancouver this weekend. I'm going to go see him as we're recording this. I'm going to see him tomorrow night. And if you want to go see him, sugarsammy.com. Go see this groundbreaking, hilarious show from not just one of Canada's great comedians, but one of the world's great comedians. I saw him in San Francisco, and he packed the house for two or three nights and packed everybody in. It was just very, very... very, very talented, very funny guy. SugarSammy.com.
Maybe we could get Joe and Leo, my old radio colleagues from K103, on the road doing the English and Ganyageha comedy show.
It's wacky ethnic styling from start to finish, my friend.
Are Joe and Leo both with us?
So Leo's very much with us. Joe has retired as of 6 months ago.
But they're both still alive.
They're very much
How about Sonny Joe? Is he still with us?
I haven't checked in on him.
Okay, please
now.
Do. I'll
take a memo and I'll get back to you on that.
Do you speak Ganyageha, Chuck?
Ostunha. I'm of that age group where we're still recoiling from the residential school the impact of residential school and the effects of the church and whatnot. So while it was spoken in my house, it was not promoted. My mother spoke it. My mother understood it clearly. And again, it's your children. It's the mother who primarily raises her children, right? Dad's off doing his own thing and working, grinding out a living and sweating it out. So it was one of those things, particularly growing up in the States, where if you stand out, you really stand out. So
that's the thinking behind not promoting it.
Not promoting it, okay. Right? My mom, speaking for my household, just didn't want us to get harassed, didn't want us to suffer any unnecessary torment at the hands of these tough Irish kids.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
In my neighborhood.
So. I've known you for so many years, mm-hmm. and I know you well enough that you're a confident, brash, outgoing guy. I can't see you being bullied. I can't see anyone bullying you, but I guess you're a grown man now and you were a kid then, right?
I was much smaller. I didn't come to this world this size. No? I had to go through certain larval stages to get here to assume my final Pokemon form. But I was much shorter back in the old days with a speech impediment and the whole nine yards. So in my personal case, that's my situation. I'm really encouraged now because we're seeing a cultural resurgence amongst the young people, 20 and under, and in that age, not just them, but in that bracket, who are really embracing the language and going at it full bore, dedicating their lives, their careers to it, who are entering into full-time Mohawk immersion programs, because we were nearing the end. It was It was getting close, and none of that was by accident. These are not just things that just happened along the way. These are by design as part of that overarching resolving the air quote Indian problem issue. I mean, look, you know me, so I work today. I'm a farmer today. Even the act of farming was outlawed in 1951.
Jesus Christ.
We weren't allowed to farm? Mm-mm, as of 1951, Act of Parliament declared it illegal. Now, while they couldn't stop us from farming, they could certainly choke us off at the economic end, which was to say, grocers were not allowed to buy their goods from native farmers. So my grandfather was a farmer, his father was a farmer, and the only thing that kept our farm going, one of the last farms in Gunawagi commercially to still keep operating, was the Steinberg family.
Wow.
Yep.
Jeez.
So the Steinbergs engaged in illicit procurement of native fruits and vegetables, and that's what allowed our farm to last a little longer than the others, but all the others folded under without this. And this is the stuff.
It's hard to imagine.
Did they do that altruistically or because it was good business or a bit of both?
Oh, Steinberg?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure everybody went out in that situation. I'm sure it was favorable. I don't know of any altruistic notions it probably just made
this
good business.
This is hard
sense.
To imagine. Those are Indian apples. You can't have, you can't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is insane.
It was meant to choke us off economically, because really the story of the 20th century has been about destroying indigenous cultures and destroying indigenous autonomy and economies simultaneously. I mean, you guys go about your lives, and you don't have to deal with it or even acknowledge it.
What I was telling you about being a kid in Montreal in 1960, that's Caughnawaga. That's where the Indians
lived. What are three things you could probably tell about Caughnawaga back in the 60s? If you had to reach back into your memory bank and say, what did you know? What did you hear in the house or what did your neighborhood, your friends, whatever?
All I understood, all we were told was that was Indian land.
Yeah.
That's where the Indians lived.
Yeah.
And they were called reserves.
Yeah.
And nobody explained to me or us what any of that meant.
Right.
And I just knew that when you went over the bridge, and you would point over there and say, well, that's Caughnawaga. And it was presented to you as a kid as les autres.
Right. Exactly.
It's another, another thing over there. Exactly. You know, it's like,
Yeah.
And idiotically.
No, you're
idiotically,
a kid.
Idiotically, when you're a kid, you say things
you trust
like,
the adults.
Do they have arrows?
Do they live in teepees? I still get that to this day.
But that's how fucking absurd it all is.
Yeah.
That, you know, when I look back on it now, I think, oh my God, we were such fucking idiots.
Yeah.
It's really, I mean,
the lack of curiosity is what I find disturbing sometimes. Yeah. Like, I could probably name half the streets in Laval for you if I had to.
Yeah.
I know, there's a lot of those tempo car shelters, a lot of white brick going on over there. And I try to familiarize myself, but we have to be curious about the world.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
We have to get out there, and we have to be brave, and we have to ask questions.
Yeah.
Or we can live in our own insecurity and, for lack of a better word, ignorance. But we've been your neighbors for almost 400 years now.
Well.
And so I might ask, well, who do you know from my town?
Yeah. Well, you know the other thing.
You know Joe? Indian Joe.
Yeah.
Dark hair, more average height, you know, slightly dark. Yeah, that's him. You know him.
But you know, the other thing we were taught, Chuck, was we weren't welcome there.
That's...
And that was, I guess, an early version of media nonsense.
Yeah.
You know? Because that's, you know, that was a sort of... It's sort of a theme that's...
I can remember that from growing up in Fredericton, the tiny little Micmac St. Mary's Reserve. Yeah. Oh, don't go near the reserve. The Indians will kick the shit out of you.
When you look back on it.
Yeah.
You probably can't explain this to me, but I'm curious. When you talked about language, are there, you know, if you go Akwesasne, Micmac, like... Because I know, like, Italian is Latin-based.
Yes.
And, you know, French and Italian are similar.
Okay.
Like, what's the origin of the language, and how does it differ from corner to corner in North America?
That's a really good question. So, North America is divided. I'm going to screw this up. My linguistics friends are going to, like, they're going to text me immediately. Let's say there are about 5 or 6 major language groups in North America. So our language group would be the Iroquoian language group. So we are an Iroquoian people. We have a matrilineal, matrilocal structure. The woman's the boss of the household type of thing. Our language is mutually intelligible with at least 5 other groups of people: the Cayuga, the Onondaga, the Oneida, the Seneca, and to some degree the Tuscarora. But by extension, before the Iroquoian language, there was what's referred to as the Proto-Iroquoian language, which goes back another several millennia before that, at which the Cherokee would have been a linguistic member of that family at the same time. So today it's... the languages between the Iroquoian peoples, those 5-6 groups that I named there, are mutually intelligible. There are, like, if you go to Naples, it's going to be different than if you go to Palermo.
Dialects.
Yes. Yeah. So there are subtle nuances, but they're mutually intelligible. It's like talking to somebody from Georgia,
right,
and ask them how to get to the Piggly Wiggly,
right,
and they're going to give you an answer. You have to listen real hard, but it's a lot like that. So, but in terms of the Mi'kmaq or the Abenaki or the Nipissing, all those people sort of east of us, it's a totally different language group.
Really?
Yeah.
So the word for example, where is something, that would be different out there. 100%.
It would be as different than Greek and...
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Greek and Sicilian, for example.
Fascinating. I find it fascinating.
I know how to say thank you and goodbye.
Please do.
Yeah. Well, Ona is also hello, is it not? Is it a greeting as well as goodbye?
Yeah, you're thinking of that Hawaiian movie Lilo and Stitch. I think little brown kid, big eyes, stumpy legs. No. Okay. No.
Now a Chuck. Now a goal.
There you go.
Now a goal for throwing me under the bus.
There you go. Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
I also know, I don't know what it means, but I've always liked the word Dewa Zanidakta. What does that mean?
So close. So close. Dewa Dunizakta.
Dewa Dunizakta.
That's right.
Because I used to hear that over there, I'd go, Dewa Zanidakta, 2 bits.
Yeah, that's our economic development commission. It's real sexy. But I mean, listen.
What does it mean?
It's just the name of an organization.
It's the name of our...
Dewa Dunizakta?
Dewa Dunizakta.
Dewa Dunizakta. Okay, so, I'm going to work on it.
We got a word for everything. I'll tell you right now. But I mean, you do the best you can with what we have, 12 letters.
Yeah.
12 letters, a colon, and an apostrophe.
That's it?
And we make them work.
Well, what's with the numbers? Because in BC, where I live now, there's Squamish is now what looks to me like Sisqua 7 Mesh. There's a 7.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And because the road signs are now bilingual in BC.
I've seen that. Okay. I know exactly what you speak
of. Is it a number?
So that's a different. So that's like me asking you, who's a French speaker from Quebec, to translate Russian.
Okay.
It's such a different language family. I wouldn't even know where to get my fingernails into it. But it's don't forget our language. It's even hard to learn in the written form.
Must be.
Because it was originally transcribed by Jesuits, and you know those buggers loved to write down everything they could, and they were crafty little men in black gowns having a good time. Anyways, so they wrote out the language, but they wrote it in such a way that where you know it's not uncommon for our words to be something like 18 letters long for a word, but that word explains with great detail exactly what it is. Without any question, where it is, to whom it's being spoken, where it's going, everything is sort of encapsulated and distilled within that one word. And the way that they sort of consolidated the oral or the auditory form of that was in I think 12 and 13 letters, depending on which regional dialect you want to go.
What's the word for where?
Ganume.
Okay.
Why would he need to know? What
no,
looking
I
for?
Just, you know, I'm curious.
Where do you need to get to?
In you know, it's one of those words like when I'm in Italy, I know dove it's helpful.
Yeah.
And se usa, and where is that? You know, and I thought to myself, I wonder what that is in a.
Well, work it. Well, yeah. I mean, you must come in and you see your producer, Spiro, Nick George, over here, and you say, Yasu, te canes, malaga. And he might ask you, and you go, peninda, peninda. You know what I mean?
It's fascinating to me.
A tough experience for me was the only Mohawk getting on an all-Greek bus once. I jumped on a bus that was going to New York City one time because, you know, I had to get to New York, but I didn't have the cash. But the Greek Cultural Association somewhere was going to see some musical performer, Dalladas, okay, in New York. And so it was like $100 round trip, and I get to stay in a room with a bunch of Greek guys for a weekend and take care of my business in New York. So they said, my friend, before you get on the bus, when you go up, you say something nice in Greek, you go up to the front and you say, Tikanes Koufalis, okay? Koufala. It's the stump opening in a tree. You know, like the whole...
Oh, like dummy, like retard.
No. It's okay. It's probably closer
you're
to...
You're hollow, though.
Closer to like a working girl, like a kufala.
Okay. Oh, putana.
It wasn't putana, it was kufala. Anyways, really? I get on there. I'm like, I'm going to be the big man on campus, big maga, right? I go up there, hey, tikanis kufalis. There's 30 older Greek women who look at me, throwing their purses at me, hitting me. Why you say kufala? Why are you? And I just had to lay low. And of course, we got to the border. Who's the one guy that gets pulled off the bus? Everybody else has landed immigrant status and papers. I'm the one guy with a status card, and I get yanked. Don't hold the bus up for an hour.
Oh God.
So it's been a good run. So to go back to your answer, your first question, yes, farming was outlawed in 1951, 1954. The federal government outlawed the ability for Native communities to organize class lawsuits. So they could not organize the funds to be able to hire a lawyer to fight land claims.
Jesus Christ.
So if you control the courts and you control the legislation and you control the police, you pretty much, you've got the racket tied down. So, but there's a lot of things that are either, and I hear this a lot, they didn't teach us that in school. Well, you're a goddamn grown adult.
Yep.
You've had 40 years under your belt since high school. Pick up a book.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't you have a modicum of curiosity?
Yep.
It's just, what is the whole Oka 1990 thing? What's that all about anyways? Yeah. And sort
of. Well, I know that one because I lived it, but I had no idea about what you were just talking about. I wouldn't have been inspired to go look that up because I don't know anything about it.
All right, I'm going to write that on a website.
Okay.
Okay. You got a pen handy?
I do.
I'm going to spell it.
Yeah.
Okay. You ready?
Okay. Go.
G.
Yeah.
O-O.
Okay.
G.
Okay.
L-E.
Google?
Google. Google. .com. It'll answer any question you have. Why is the sky pink in the evening?
But you know what? It's more interesting to me and more fascinating to me to be able to sit down and have a conversation or a beer. You know, like my question to you about the land acknowledgements, I've been wanting to ask somebody from a Native community that for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I don't know anybody.
You got me, Terry, well, right here.
Yeah,
right.
Give me some, man.
Ted's been keeping us apart. Ted's known me for over a decade.
I've been running interference.
And he's trying to keep his world separate.
And this is the thing. When you mesh and you get together with people and people break bread or drink beer and have conversations and say things like, I'm going to ask you a question. Yeah. Now, don't punch me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's the way we learn about each
other. Let me be your lifeline.
Okay.
You need to make that call. I'm going to give you my cell number. You call me. I would chuck him in a pinch him in a bathroom right now.
Okay.
This guy's saying something to me. I have no idea.
I have a question.
Okay. Go for it, man.
Poseidon has a question.
What's up with the no clean drinking water that I keep hearing?
Oh, man.
So, because I've heard multiple sources. Yeah. I've heard it's some of the reserves' faults. I've heard it's that they're in too, the places are too remote. I've heard they don't have the equipment or the money. I keep hearing 80 different things. So,
excellent question, my nautical friend. Because he is Poseidon, I'm assuming
he's
here.
He's the god of the sea.
Is he now? And so...
God of the ponds, actually.
What's that?
God of the ponds.
The ponds. Okay. There's a whole Medusa story in there, too, which is a little touchy in this day and age.
Yeah, you know your mythology.
I try to stay up with the kids. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, the kids love this Onassis network. They're all talking about it on the streets. They're like, the Onassis network. No, I'm kidding. I make fun. The thing with the water. Okay, look. So... let me try and wrap this really nice and tight to make it really understandable. So the native people of Canada were not exactly allocated the finest real estate that the lords had to offer. Okay,
so I shouldn't be laughing. Jack.
I'm trying to deliver
Stop
it with
making
levity.
It funny.
Or else it's like making out in Schindler's List, right? Okay. We were not placed on the most productive of lands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And again, remember, this was not by choice. Okay. We're talking about the Indian Act. We were put into the most non-productive lands as far away as anybody had to see them. Okay. We were a problem to be moved and to be kept out of sight. And hopefully over time, they will give up to despair, depression, and being choked off from the greater society. And they'll just die out. In 100 years from now, nobody will have ever heard of them. It'll be the problem you resolve. So what happens? You have communities spring up, okay? You also have dumps. So it becomes very, we're going to say people in the waste management industry, okay? It becomes very easy for them to dump their materials on or near native grounds because there's no policing. Native territories are not governed by provinces. They're governed by the federal government, okay? So when you effectively, for all intents and purposes, when you cross the Mercier Bridge into Caughnawaga, you're leaving Quebec. The Quebec law does not apply there. You're entering sort of this federal grayish zone from a legislative or legal perspective. So there aren't a lot of – it becomes very difficult to access the necessary infrastructure needs – to be able to provide something like clean, potable water, solid infrastructure, particularly if you live in a remote community where everything has to be flown in, okay? We're going to put them on the most remote piece of property as far away from anybody as possible, hope they die off there, and they eventually become just a footnote in history. So getting infrastructure developed into these remote places is very difficult in the first place, okay? In places like... there are other communities as well, too. It's the management because nobody wants to hone the chiefs, as they said in Slapshot, okay? Federal government doesn't want the problem. The federal government will argue, well, that's a provincial problem, okay? The province, the neighboring communities have the infrastructure. Why not tie into their infrastructure? The province says, well, it's not our problem. These Indians are a federal problem. They're your guys. You deal with them. And so we fall into a bureaucratic and administrative wasteland for generations. Listen, we don't want to have foul water. We want to be able to drink water just like you. And Ted, you come over to my house and I've got a water bubbler by the door. I know it's very swanky and look at this. They have a Brita water filter on every tap, even the bathtub, as a matter of fact. It's because we fall into that gray zone. We're neither fish nor fowl. We're neither provincial nor federal. What are you going to do? And quite frankly, politically, Native people, well, Mohawk specifically, we don't vote in external elections. We don't vote in provincial or federal elections. But Native people across Canada are not represented within the Parliament. We have no representation there. So if Natives don't vote, okay, and they have no voice and they have no official representation in the House, then who's going to speak up for them?
Has it not gotten any better under his ostensibly indigenous friendly prime minister?
He hasn't, listen, and don't get me wrong. I'm a friend of Mark Miller, his former minister of indigenous affairs. Mark's been over to my farm. We've hung out. We've shot the breeze many
times. I've never met a more dedicated minister than
we've never seen anything like him.
Mark and that portfolio are just unbelievable. Mark.
So it is not. It did not improve with him in that portfolio.
Oh, I think it did in terms of the communication and cooperation. Mark was a great asset. I was sad to see him go, as I'm sure many others have expressed that they were sad to see him go for the first time. You have a minister who's learned to speak Mohawk and spoke Mohawk, right, in Parliament, in his opening address. That has never happened, ever. I've never known a non-native who spoke Mohawk like that, much less a member of the cabinet.
Yeah, you talk about reconciliation, acts of reconciliation.
I like Mark.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, politically, we're in different places.
Sure.
As a human being, I like the guy.
This is the thing we were just talking about. We were talking about on a previous episode of the podcast. We're talking about the political conversation in the country has gone all sideways because, you can't just disagree with them, a politician now. Mm-hmm. You've got to throw rocks at them or, put stickers on your car that say "fuck Trudeau," or you argue with. You can't just have a debate. You have to pull someone's mouth open and shit down their throat and tell them what a piece of shit they are.
That escalated fast. Yeah, we went from political exchange to open your mouth and shit down your esophagus.
That's where the debate is going. You used to be able to have a conversation or a spirited debate, as they used to call it. And now it's like, fuck him and screw him.
Well,
And he's a piece of shit.
Well, because it's low resolution.
Yeah, big
time. So we went from 128-bit down to 8-bit conversations with 8-bit words.
That's a great way to describe it.
You guys need more of those 26-letter words to explain something.
I want to talk a little bit about Chuck's experience in television. but we have to, because we don't want to just talk about...
No,
we don't want to make it political, but that's where the conversation went, and I'm good with it, and you're good with it.
I'm okay. We're all friends.
Yeah, we're all friends. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we haven't been too racist, eh?
No.
A tiny bit, but not.
Come on, Ted.
you brought up the feathers.
Yeah. You brought that shit on yourself, woman. Back in the kitchen.
Let's talk about our good friends at Accutech. It's a new sponsor that has jumped on board, and we, for the love of God, don't know why, because... Accutech is a second generation, well, it's run by Tom, who's a second generation master electrician. His father started this company over 25 years ago, and now Tom has taken what he learned from his dad and taken his father's philosophies and applied it to the ongoing success of Accutech Electric. And they can look after just about anything. And it doesn't matter if it's residential, it doesn't matter if it's industrial, commercial. They can help you with a lot of things you wouldn't think of. For example, during the ice storm back in April of this year, Accutech was out supporting as many clients as they could. They're trying to get people to help them restore their power or safely have their power lines repaired. They've had all kinds of conversations over the last year with residential and commercial clients who are trying to get prepared for the next big storm because there is going to be a next time. And they distribute a product called Generac Generators that they're very proud of. And they offer in-person evaluations of your home or your building's electrical consumption. And they'll help you prepare for another event like that, from running heating and lights to just having enough power to maintain your fridge. They'll tell you what the solutions are, or they can do a simple electrician job at your house. They can help you with an upgrade. And I had a long conversation with Tom and Trish, and I love the philosophy of this company, the way they support their employees. They work hard to be transparent. And again, family-run business, owner is readily reachable if you need to talk to them. If you need anything that has anything to do with electric work, Accutech Electric, that's Accutech.ca.
I can tell by the tears on your Generac that you're never, ever, ever, ever coming back. Anybody else remember that song? Or just
I do
me?
Not.
The tears in your anorak?
I'm waiting for the big buildup of the chorus.
Oh, no, yeah. That's the only part that I remember. Okay.
I do not.
Yeah, it was it was a song back in the day that no one remembers.
I love my AccuTech.
Yes.
Use it every day.
Okay.
Let's talk about cars. About
you want to talk about cars?
Let's talk about cars.
I never get rid of that. I'm a car guy.
Hard air from the Maritimes. Yes, you restore Mustangs, don't you?
I am a huge fan of the first generation Mustang, and I've owned many, many over the years. I'm not one of these redneck, take your Chevy and shove it up your ass. I'm not like that. I just happened to grow up around Fords. I've had a lot of Fords from the 60s, and I just fell in love with the 1965, 1966 Mustang and managed to accrue over my life probably with 16 of them over the years.
Wow.
I like them a lot. I'm
you
a little OCD,
a
little bit of a fixation.
Gotcha.
Little bit of a OCD going on there, you know, and so that's what I do in my spare time. I own a number of 65, 66 Mustangs, mostly convertibles, and I while away the long winter Canadian months.
Very cool.
Yeah. And and I work on those. And
wow.
Well, if you went to Jaguar Land Rover Laval, and I think you could use a Land Rover, Chuck, living out on the farm as
tell
you do.
Me more.
A Land Rover Defender. I think Chuck would look good in
a Land Rover Defender.
Yeah?
A British name you can count on.
There you go. By the way, I'm going to get to that afterwards, speaking of British. Jaguar Land Rover Laval are longtime sponsors of this podcast. They've been with us since the get-go. And they now have an exclusive deal with iCar. You know the iCar track up at Mirabel where you can go out and...
I was just there last week.
You were not. You're making that up.
Play along, Ted.
Okay.
This is how it goes. Theater of the mind.
They now have an off-road track. And Jaguar Land Rover Laval is the exclusive sponsor of that off-road track. And were you to purchase a Land Rover Defender, well, you could take it right up there and go on that track to your heart's delight. And if I know... Nino and Renato De Cubellis and Adrian McGrath, their marketing director, like I think I know them, there will be more than one client event that will take place on the iCar off-road track sponsored by Jaguar Land Rover Laval. They treat their clients so well at that dealership, and it's you can get all kinds of luxury vehicles anywhere you want, but it's customer service and client service that makes the difference. And it doesn't get any better than it does at Jaguar Land Rover Laval, jaguar.ca, or landrover.ca. Did you buy that shirt in England? You wear the nicest shirts.
Would you stop, please?
You wear the nicest shirts, Chuck, and they all look like they come off Savile Row.
I like to go on German Street when I'm in London. I do like the clothes there.
Is that a London bought shirt?
No, actually, this is a domestic. This is No, all my Land Rover Defender shirts are currently in storage right now, waiting for my return to the Empire. but no, this is pretty much this is a local.
Well, it's very nice.
Little local rag.
Tell me about being on TV, eh?
Hey, crazy Fighting Back! What a series! Kids loved it.
Thanks.
They couldn't wait to get
Wasn't
home from school. Fighting Back's on. Shut up! I'm watching Fighting Back.
Do you remember the song?
Fighting Back.
Hey.
Nicely
done.
Two songs I remember.
Yeah.
All right, now that I've met you for the first time, we've never met before, is the Fighting Back song and then Fashion Television. Fashion Television?
I think it was Fashion Television.
What was her name? Jeannie Becker. I woke up one morning and she's in my living room. No word of a lie. My wife at the time organized a shoot. Jeannie Becker set up something. Some indigenous fashion. I go downstairs and Jeannie Becker's there in my living room. They're setting up lights and I'm like, nobody told me this was happening today.
Wow.
This is Wednesday. I was going to sleep in today. So I'm in my robe and only my robe, stirring my coffee and Jeannie Becker's. And I don't know what to say. I'm mentally impaired at that. I'm not right in the head. So I'm stirring my coffee and I said, Miss Becker, it's a pleasure to meet you. Please make yourself at home. And my brain is saying, say more, brain. Come on, you could do better than that. She thinks you're stupid. And I'm like, you know, I really enjoyed Fashion Television as a young man growing up. And she's just looking at me with the most empty husk eyes, just looking through my very soul. And, you know, particularly the theme song, I remember. What I really liked was on when those mesh shirts came out. You know, the ones where you could see all the business underneath here. And my brain is saying, keep going. Keep going. You're knocking them dead. And, to her credit, she acknowledged it. And she said, thank you very much. And it became definitely quiet in my kitchen. I just said, I'm going back up to bed right now. I'll see you folks when you're done. So there. My great pantheon, he had all the bigs. I got Terry DeMonte from Fighting Back, and I've got Jeannie Becker from Fashion Television. That's almost the Canadian trifecta.
I was going to say, that's iconic. That's Canadiana.
That's as good as it gets.
But you did have a time on television, did you?
Sure,
not?
I did.
A couple of times on television.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
I was part of a show on Discovery Channel called Junk Raiders. Mm-hmm. Word kind of, I don't know how. I put up a few YouTube videos, nothing big, and a friend of a friend of a friend who was a friend of the producer of the show saw them. They called me in, had an interview. They signed me up. So basically the premise of the show is this. They get it's a Canadian show shot in Toronto. So basically they get six tradespeople from across the country, throw them together for 30 straight days. There's a great collection of personalities, we'll say. We got the guy from Manitoba, you got the guy from Vancouver, is a little more liberal. Then you got the Newf in there, is what we can say. Can we say Newf?
Sure,
we have the Newfoundlander. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so it was a great mix. And you throw a Mohawk in the mix and a little blonde girl from Toronto, and it's a party. And they give us 30 days and $5,000 to renovate an entire restaurant that looked like it had. It looked like it was in Baghdad. Like this hospital, you know what I mean? It was like Lebanon in the 1980s. It was just bombed right out. So we just we went to work on that. And then the producer of the show, who is also the owner of the production company, and they have a number of shows that are still on TV now today called Come Dine With Me, Canadian Storage Wars is another one.
All reality shows?
Yeah, they're all these, what do they call them? Non-scripted television.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My bad.
They rebranded
them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're non-scripted television. And so after that show wrapped, I got offered a couple other shows. We shot pilots in Vancouver. We shot pilots across the country. And the longer it went, and you know, if you've ever been engaged in a television production deal or been held under contract, it's a lot of hurry up and wait.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot of promises. This is going to be great. I know we're going to sell it. We're meeting at Banff this year. It's going to be huge. And you wait, and you wait, and the cobwebs grow. And then they say, well, we showed it. We screened it for them. Can you do it like this, but now do it with explosions? Okay? So we ended up doing... we ended up doing about 9 different pilot shows.
Wow.
And the final straw for where I just said I'm done with this is, you know Mike Holmes from Holmes & Holmes?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Mike Holmes was set to retire several years ago. He's like, I made my money. I want to go back. I want to go back out there, start get my contract and consulting business going. And they were expecting his retirement. Now, there's another show called like House of Brian Baumler. I think it's on DIY. They were going to put Brian Baumler into Mike Holmes' slot, and I was going to take over Brian's slot at that point. At that last minute during negotiations, Mike Holmes came back and said, yeah, I'll do it, but I'll do it in game show format. I don't know what that was all about. And so it all fell apart. But I knew the shows were getting bad when every couple of weeks they said, all right, we're going to shoot another show. We've got a warehouse booked for the weekend. Okay, what's the tentative working title for the show? Okay, bear with me. It's called Blow Shit Up. And I'm like, we're really circling the drain now.
Wow.
At one point, they were working on one where they wanted to send me to former places in Europe where that had been the home of armed conflict or prison riots to explore improvised weapons. Shanks and shivs and things that were used to explore the history and to do recreations with body gels to see if could a shiv made out of a number 2 pencil and a hammer lock sharpener really work?
Wow.
So stuff like that.
Someone was drunk at that meeting.
Yeah. it just degenerated and got really, really bad.
You know what would make a good non-scripted television show?
What?
Your hunting trips.
Oh, brilliant segue, my friend. I just got back from moose hunting 2 weeks
ago. Did you get kicked in the head this
year?
No,
I steered clear this year.
I brought the picture, actually.
Did you? Yeah. Did you show Terry? Okay.
Well, let's tell the story first, Chuck. This was last year, right?
2 years ago.
Okay, well, let's go back even further. You and some of the other guys from town, you go every year, right?
Yeah, Fefa McCumber, who I think you know.
Fefa
and Donna. And so Fefa and I go moose hunting every fall. We'll go with his son, and we'll bring a third party, a buddy of ours named Cody. And this one particular year, it was just the three of us. It was me, Fafa, and a younger guy named Russell, who had been doing some work with me. And lo and behold, like an hour into the hunt, boom, big bull. Big 900-pound young bull.
Where were you, northern Quebec?
Out towards Mi'kmaq territory, as a matter of fact, towards New Brunswick.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So it was a good, 10-12-hour drive. It was a long haul to get out there. Within the first hour, we seen a moose, boom. This is the young guy Russell. It was his first chance to shoot a moose. Let him have it. Shot the moose. The moose sort of staggered for a second, so I shot him in the shoulder. Moose dropped right there. We're celebratory. The cigarettes and the cigars come out. We're enjoying life. Because if you've ever been hunting, you've been hunting, Terry?
No.
There's an adrenal force that just overcomes you.
Yeah.
And it's not the chase, and it's not even the kill. It's all of it together where you're just, and I don't want to over romanticize it and get like I'm telling a Farley Moat story or something. It's, you are at your basic essence of who you are. Strip away everything else, the bills, the wife, the whatever, the Land Rover Laval, whatever you got going on. Strip away all that. You are your basic core essence of a man. Of a human being, okay? So you get dumped with this adrenaline where you're just pumped. The moose drops. It's beautiful. It's textbook. We stand around. We light up the cigars. We got it done. Now the hard work begins. What people don't consider when they're hunting, it's not the hunt. It's not even the shot fired. It's the next 4 to 6 hours you have to spend now quartering, gutting, field dressing, and dragging out of the woods to get this thing back home to a freezer somewhere. So it's a task. It's not Elmer Fudd, where you shoot and slam over your back on a stick. Yeah. And
and what does this thing weigh, Chuck, approximately?
This one probably came in at about 900 pounds.
Jeez.
At that point. Okay. Yeah, so we drop the moose goes down, we light up the cigars, take a few minutes to sort of relax and enjoy the moment as we do with these occasions, and all right, it's time to work. Our friend Fafa says, all right, Chuck, you grab the right leg, I'll grab the left. We'll shackle her up, and we'll drag her out to the road. And it wasn't her. It was a young bull. So the one thing I did is I checked the moose before I went back there, poked his eyeball with the barrel of my rifle. Nothing. Eyeball was still. And then I ventilated him through the under his jaw. Okay. Put air conditioning in the back of his head. Gone, okay? Go along to the back hoof. All right, let's spread her open. And just then, as I'm holding that rear hoof in two hands, it actively pulls out of my hands, comes back, and hits me with the force of a young Mike Tyson circa 1986. Sent me 6 feet through the air, and I landed on my arse. And in that moment, I didn't know what it had... It was unbelievable. The impact was just like getting hit by Mike Tyson. Imagine some night you're sitting at a bar a chat with a gal. Up comes Mike Tyson without warning, clocked you right in the head and sends you right into the men's room.
It literally came back from the dead.
It was
it rigor mortis, Chuck, or was it still alive?
So what happens is often with many mammals, there is a lot of built-up neurological activity that is and the muscles are tensed.
Yeah.
Okay, so we just shot the moose. The muscles tensed, and there's still this electrical neurological activity that's happening within the cerebellum and the spinal cord, okay? What had happened was, as deliberate as if I was shaking a grown man's hand, that hoof pulled out of my hands and cold-cocked me right in the eye. Directly in the eye, I sailed, hit the ground, and like the Fighting Irish, I jumped right up.
You're ready to go?
And my compatriots were looking at me because they saw what had happened. But more importantly, they heard it. They only described it as hoof on meat is what it sounded like. I stood up and my eye was split open because with enough force, the hoofs they're sharp. It split right across my eyelid down my eye here and just gushing blood. And I said, somebody hit me. Somebody hit me. They must have jumped out of the bush, hit me, and then ran away.
So you didn't realize that it was the moose.
Never lost consciousness, but sure got stupid really fast.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And so,
were you concussed?
There was no dilation of the pupils. I didn't lose consciousness. There was none of the dizziness or any of the symptoms you associate with concussions.
But you had the cartoon stars going around.
Oh, my Lord. Whistles and birds. It was bad. And then... But the problem is we are hours from a hospital at closest. We are hours from anywhere at this point. So might as well hunker down and cut this moose up. So then we spent the next 4 or 5 hours blood gushing out of my head. My face swole to something like
well, we have a
the
picture.
Elephant wow. Man.
Yep.
If you're watching the podcast.
John Merrick. Don't look directly into it. No. Just get a peripheral view.
Lucky you didn't lose your eye.
Yes. No, absolutely. Yeah. Well, the crazy thing is the next day we came back, we hoisted it up into a tree because we weren't going to drag it out at night. So we hoisted it up into a tree, came back for it the next morning. When we loaded the rear quarters onto the tailgate of the truck, that same hoof slipped off the tailgate, and the young man that was with me, it hit his boot and it cut right through his boot.
Yeah, yeah.
I am the luckiest guy alive. I've had cars fall on my head.
Ooh, boy.
Okay. I've been kicked by a moose. I've been chased with guns, stabbed. I've had an appendix explode and wait 3 days before I went to the hospital because I thought it was gas. I've fallen off tall structures. I'm not saying I'm indestructible. I'm just...
People would say, serves you right, you fucking moose killer.
Yeah, that's
well,
for sure.
Well, where's your food come from?
Yep.
All the food in my freezer was either raised and slaughtered by me, chickens, pork, everything. I would do it all on my own farm. Or I hunted it in the hunting season. So whether it's deer meat or moose meat, I got to be a part of that animal's life. If I didn't rear it, raise it, feed it, love it, brush it, and water it every day and give it the best life possible, either on my farm or when I'm out in the woods making sure it was a humane kill, it was swift, the dispatch was quick, the suffering was minimized and mitigated, and I used everything. So everything from that moose goes to use. So I run a school for young adults. It's my own thing to sort of combat the effects of the Indian Act and the destruction of Mohawk families. Is I sort of come in and they're able to stay with me for 3 years, and I teach them bush skills. I teach them traditional farming and agricultural skills, carpentry, welding, automotive, the type of hand skills that maybe were more commonplace 60 years ago amongst adults. And so that's what I dedicate my time to now. Not just chasing moose, but listen, I love moose. I mean, you ever had moose, Terry?
No.
I know Ted hasn't.
No.
So we got to do something. It is absolutely succulent. It's tender. You always want it medium rare, more towards the rare side, because moose has almost no fat in it.
Gamey?
Nope.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right.
And you're preaching to the choir because I'm a food chain guy, but I was just acknowledging that because I know people watching.
People are going to listen.
Will say it serves you right for shooting
moose.
Well, listen,
if you can take... If you can take issue with a native guy hunting moose, okay, in season, within indigenous territories, like really,
Chuck, you're preaching to the choir.
What do I have to do here? No. Give me a land acknowledgement. give me something here. I'm doing my best with the rules you're making on,
really,
but you keep switching
the
rules.
We
want you to be Indian. Yeah. We don't want you to be Indian. stick to a script.
Chuck's a good sport, isn't he?
Chuck, you're a great sport, and this was illuminating and fascinating, and I can't thank you enough for spending time with us.
Oh, we got a tweet sheet to do before Chuck goes.
What's that all about?
Well, the tweet sheet, Chuck, is something I do on my radio show. What's the name of my radio show?
Yeah, Depeche-toi, because we also have commercials to do, and I'm going to fall right over.
Okay. On Light 106.7 in Ganawaga, I pick three tweets every day that I think are funny.
You see what you just did? Yeah. So you mixed your call letters with your locale. So he was like, on Light 106 in Ganawaga. But I love
it. I'm tired too.
We are so embedded in you subliminally. Yeah.
Light 106.7 in Hudson. And I bring some to the podcast as well. And these are actually two of these we did on the Bill Brownstein episode, but they so reminded me of Chuck that I've brought them back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Including this one from at 6-2 and even. I saw three ravens yesterday and fell into an Elizabethan despair, so I immediately put on my trusty codpiece, wrote 100 sonnets, and began wooing several maidens by the light of a beeswax candle.
What is he, some kind of fop? A dandy?
From at GN Doe, can one of you millennials make my phone ring sound like a Tennessee farmhouse screen door closing on a languid August afternoon, ice cubes clinking in a pitcher of sweet tea as a cigar box banjo gets tuned?
Is this what we've become? We've devolved. We were so much better than this just two generations ago. But it's very timely.
It is. Yeah, it is. What else we got? We got a couple more, I think. From at Benedict's Red. I just shared some tricks with a rabbit. My entire life is a fucking lie.
He's not wrong.
No. And from at Hexprax. I love that beavers have a genetic dislike of the sound of running water. They're born at the river like, God damn, shut the fuck up. What's with all this fucking racket? Jesus Christ. Can somebody do something about this fucking noise? Fine, never mind. I'll take care of it.
Dad.
There you go. That's the tweet sheet, Chuck.
I like
curated
it.
With you in mind.
That's a very a curious assemblage.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. I like what you're doing
here.
Yeah.
Just before we go, we have to give thanks to our good friends at Matelas Bonheur. Matelas Bonheur is a company I've been speaking on their behalf for a long, long time. And I don't think Ted had ever been to a store until this week when I brought him to the original Matelas Bonheur store on Gouin Boulevard in Saint-Genevieve and introduced you to the shopping experience that I've been talking about for a long time on the radio on this podcast.
I don't get out to the mattress stores too often, Chuck.
No, sir.
I'm more of a Merson man myself.
Yeah. Okay. So we went to Matelas Bonheur's original location on Gouin Boulevard in Pierrefonds, and I had no inkling or plans of buying anything when we got there. But when we did get there and I started to look around, I was kind of like, you know, I need a new duvet, and those are pretty nice. And Kevin set me up with exactly what I need. They're like sleep consultants.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
That's
do you sleep on your back or on your side?
Yeah. You know? I'm a belly guy.
Yeah. You You're a belly sleeper?
Yeah, I'm a big belly sleeper.
He could fix you up with what you need, mattress wise, bedding wise. He sold me the perfect duvet and duvet cover for me. And because I knew the promo code,
yes,
Terry and Ted,
yes,
I got a discount.
Yep.
I happen to be Ted of Terry and Ted. That's why I knew the promo code.
Matelas Bonheur, 17 locations in and around the city and at matelasbonheur.ca. And before we go, another tip of the cap to our friends at Merson Automotive. On the last podcast, Ted was having a little trouble with the Mersons.
Urson Auto.
Urson Auto.
Yeah, we went by Urson Auto to say hi to Carla and Iso, or whatever I called them. I'm sorry, Kara. And
you
Celso.
Said Celsa.
Celsa. Celsa. What is he, a dip?
Yeah. The Mersons have been looking after Montrealers' cars for a very long time. Over 50 years, third generation now running the business, and they can take care of everything, whether you need new tires. You have to replace your winter tires, store your summer tires. Your brakes are making a funny noise. You're not sure if the transmission is working properly. Excuse me. You're trying to make sure that you can extend the life of your car for another year or two. They can look after all of these things. They've been doing it for a very long time.
And they also have rebates on winter tires, this being the winter busy winter tire season. Yokohama offers a rebate, and the Mersons carry that every year. So when you go to see them, and if you need new winter tires, ask them about the Yokohama rebate. They'll tell you if you need new tires. And what I really like about the Mersons is they'll tell you if you don't.
Yep.
They'll look at your tires and say, no,
honest,
you got another season. You got another season left on those. Yeah. You're good. As opposed to the old, oh, boy, I wouldn't go anywhere on those things.
MersonAuto.com. You can also call them at 487-5545. People will actually answer the phone.
That's right. It might even be the owner.
That's right.
Yeah.
Chuck, thanks so much.
No, thank you, Terry.
I really enjoyed chatting with you. I wish that I would have met you sooner.
My eyes are up here, Terry.
We'll have to do it again.
But listen, get together. Let's have a moose barbecue.
Okay. I would like to come to the farm. You've invited me to the farm, and I haven't come yet. I would like to come to the farm. Stop making fun of my hard ass. I'm from down east, for Christ's sake.
I love a good Charlie Parkinson. Nice. Come down to the farm. Bring Terrence here with you.
100%.
I'd love to.
Yeah, when are you back?
Love to. Not sure. Have to let you know because off to the West Coast tomorrow morning.
Absolutely. Yeah. And good for you. Right on you, sir.
Thank you. we must thank Poseidon because we've been ignoring you today, Poseidon. Thank you.
Yes, it's fine. Don't worry. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
He's a good boy.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Don't forget, you can find us online with Standing By Podcast. We have a Facebook page, Instagram account. Follow us on Twitter and Sam's got us on the TikToker.
Yeah, my boy Sam has got us on the Ticker Talker. Just go and you'll see us.
Standing By, the Terry and Ted podcast has been brought to you by the UPS Store Canada. The UPS Store near you is locally owned and operated by a member of your small business community.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.